I'm Jonna Kaplan, a writer, traveler, and I run the site thesizeofconnecticut.com.
I'm Carrie Provost, writer, photographer, and general troublemaker, and you're listening to Going Steady,
a podcast about exploring places in the land of steady habits and beyond. This week, we are going to be talking about our Connecticut summer plans, as well as those best towns in Connecticut to live lists, and where might we live if we didn't live where we lived. We're also going to be talking about the Hartford Line, the new train between Hartford and New Haven, and what we think about it. And then we're going to discuss traveling in peak season when you don't want to deal with crowds, strategies to avoid all those people.
So, you know, I like to plan things to death, and I've been trying to be more spontaneous lately. So I don't know exactly what I've got going on. We have dragon boat races later on in the season and a few things down by the river in Hartford that will be fun for me to just see. I didn't grow up with a lot of time near water or with boats, so that seems like a fun thing to do. So that, we'll just say, there's my summer goal. Get myself in a kayak and not drown.
Okay.
Do you have anything? Are you going to be mostly working or do you have some time?
Yeah, well, I'm going to be mostly working, but I feel like that is, so you know, some people who are listening know that I'm in the process of rebranding, redoing, relaunching my blog, Size of Connecticut, which is about Connecticut, and I've been doing it for 9 years now. So for that, as well as just for myself, my own, you know, exploring, I've seen a lot of this state, though not all of it by any means. So now that I'm in this effort to like write a bunch of new posts and take a bunch of new pictures, I'm kind of having to rediscover the state in a different way and present it in a different way. So I think my summer will involve a lot of local travel and local exploration. And some regional travel as well. I think it's such a cliche, like at the first sign of nice weather, three quarters of Connecticut drives up to Maine. But definitely the longer days in summer give you so much more opportunity for day trips and weekend trips because you don't have this tiny window to see things. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm going to coastal Massachusetts in the next, I think in 2 weeks, and then I have some loose plans for Rhode Island and New York State, stuff like that. I'm not going to be doing any out of the region travel in the next few months, I don't think so. I'm excited to finally get to do a lot of the regional and local travel that I've been wanting to do. But outside of work stuff, I don't have plans. And I feel like summer planning is such a, it can go either way. Like, it's the time of year when there's the most pressure to create this like perfect summer, especially in a state like Connecticut, where I think it's the time of year when we have the most opportunities to do the most things. Mm-hmm. 'Cause so many businesses and attractions are seasonal, so they are open now. We do have the longer days. We do have a lack of crippling snowstorms and so on. So I think there's a lot of pressure to kind of like do, and I used to be much more like this and I never accomplished it. You know, I never had like the perfect summer with the wine tasting and the road trip and the beach and this and that. And, it, you know, so I've given up on that. I'm going for a somewhat more relaxed approach to it lately, which is hard for me because I plan everything.
There are places that we tend to like and gravitate toward, and whether that's like traveling or living or whatever, if you didn't live where you lived, where would that be? And that's, but this came out of something to do with Governor Malloy, right?
Yeah.
Who I actually don't pay too much attention to.
I used to follow Connecticut politics much more closely when I was writing about that kind of stuff more often. And now I follow it somewhat, but I happened to notice this little thing that about how Governor Malloy, when his term ends, he's moving to Essex. And I was kind of surprised, I guess, just because, you know, I'm from Fairfield County and he is too. He's from Stanford. He was mayor of Stanford. And I'd always noticed that he had like this kind of like soft spot for his hometown. And not that I ever thought about it, but if I had, I would have assumed he'd move back to Stanford. But no, he's moving to Essex. And I can understand that. I love Essex. I wouldn't live there probably, but I really love visiting there. And I'd always wondered whether governors of states had like a favorite town that they couldn't say, unless it was their hometown, they couldn't talk about it because it would be favoritism. Right. Or if they had a town that they hated, but they couldn't express it, that would be like so un-PC. So I guess we'll never know about the unfavorites, but we might have found Governor Malloy's favorite town. So I was thinking about, you know, well, both of us, we bought houses in our respective cities. So that's kind of a commitment to saying, this is the place that I'm going to stay.
I painted the walls questionable colors. So that will be work if I ever want to sell this place. There's some purple, there's some green. Upstairs there's some turquoise and macaroni and cheese orange.
It's funny, I never really even noticed before. But yeah, you've got a whole bunch of colorful walls going on here. And I painted all of my walls plain white, like as soon as I got in the house. So yeah, I've lived all over. I've lived in the southeast and the southwest and the center of the state and the northeast corner of the state, basically everywhere except the northwest, which I couldn't live because it's just too cold. But yeah, so I did choose New London, and that obviously is a place that I'm happy. But I do sometimes kind of think about Stonington. Like, when I was looking at houses, I would always look at the Stonington Borough listings, and I could not have afforded a single car garage to live in with all my belongings in Stonington. But you know, maybe someday if I get really lucky and I'll be that like weird old eccentric old lady living in a tiny house in Stonington somewhere.
I think Willimantic is the standby for where I would be most likely to defect to. I think that they've done a good job of fixing a lot of the issues that they've had. But more so, I like the community, the way that it feels. People just feel generally friendly, but not overly friendly. But just like...
This is true. Yeah. I have been spoken to by strangers on the street in Willimantic.
Yeah, but not to the point where you're like, this is a little creepy. I mean, they still have issues there, don't get me wrong. But it feels cohesive. I can imagine myself living there. But if I had a much bigger bank account, I would somewhere down in Southeast Connecticut, somewhere, you know, Stonington, I would say wouldn't be a bad place. I could maybe, I mean, it's touristy, but like I could see myself in Mystic.
I lived in Mystic for a while. The first two times I was renting in New London, and I decided that the tourists would just make it so difficult to navigate for half the year. That I didn't ultimately, and also it's much more expensive than New London, like much more. And I'm not sure that you get anything living there that you couldn't get driving there.
You're right, like the tourist factor would be a problem. But I would say, you know, and like New London is attractive to me. You've got beach down there, that's nice. It's not like the fake beach up in Hartford that I've been visiting on the little island. So I think those would be the places I'd be most likely to go toward. But you found a list of like, what were those?
I found a bunch of worst lists.
Places to live.
And we'll link all of these lists in the show notes, but you've probably seen these lists, best places to live in Connecticut. Connecticut Magazine used to do Rating the Towns. I guess they stopped doing that in 2015 because that was the most recent that I could find. And now it seems they do something called Terrific Towns, which is far less obnoxious. It's basically just they pick a few activities or interests, like nightlife or outdoorsy activities, and they highlight a few towns that are great for that type of thing. But Rating the Towns was more the type of list that I am thinking of and the type of list that I see a lot. So when I Googled this, the first one to come up is from Movoto. I don't know how to... I've always said it as move to, but it's not. It's Movoto.com. So they have the best places in Connecticut. And then a very similar but opposite to that one I found was the even stupider roadsnacks.net 10 worst places to live in Connecticut. So the top 10 are Stamford, Bethel, Danbury, Middletown, Ridgefield, West Hartford, Darien, Groton, Westport, and Newtown.
Are those to live or to avoid?
Those are to live.
Okay.
The top 10 to live. And then the top 10 to avoid, or the worst 10 to
live. I saw the picture already.
Hartford, Waterbury, Bridgeport, New Haven, New London, New Britain, Derby, Ansonia, Torrington, and Norwich. So both of these are quite specific in criteria and quite narrow, I should say. They both consider only towns over about 10,000 people,
mm-hmm.
which right there cuts out like a whole right. lot of Connecticut. And they're based on things like crime rates, poverty rate, median home price, median income. The worst places list includes health insurance, which is sort of weird since that's not provided by your city.
Right.
I guess they mean the percentage of people who have health insurance, which would seem to go along with employment.
See, but when you read off those cities, and I'm looking at the, like, the worst places list,
mm-hmm.
I would wonder, I mean, I don't know anything about the person who wrote this, but it just struck me is that those on the worst list are seem to be the most racially diverse.
Right. And there's a lot, I find a lot of like explicit classism and at the very least implicit racism in these lists. Going back to the Connecticut Magazine 2015 reading the towns, now they do this by median home value. They group the towns into these little brackets. So I printed out the median home value under 200,000 because that is by bracket. They come up with 43 towns, which they rate from 1 to 43 in the categories of culture / leisure, economy, crime, community engagement, and education. And number one on most of these, many of these things is Norfolk. And New London is number two on culture, but at the very bottom in all the rest.
Interesting.
And when I see like education rankings like that, I always think that they are ranking diversity low and they're ranking an all-white school high.
Right.
And people will always have other reasons for that. And yeah, we know all of those. But personally, you know, when I think about the education, my hypothetical children, I would rather have them go to a school that was ranked lower but had like a kind and compassionate group of teachers and administrators. Right. Rather than a school like I went to, which was ranked very high, but was full of like people that were just snobs and treated children horribly mm-hmm. and were not supportive in the least. I feel like I can teach them the stuff that they're not getting in school at that age. Okay, so the employment rate in a town, I feel, can be very important if you're looking right. at the best place to move to get a job.
Correct.
If you want to move someplace and you want to find a job in the town where you live, then that's obviously very important. But if you already have a job mm-hmm. And you're just looking for a place to live, it's very weird, not surprising, but very weird to me that these seem to be ranked based on the assumption that regardless of your income, you won't want to live around people who are making a lower income.
No.
Or you won't want to live around a place that has housing that is too affordable. And which is a strange, you know, because you don't want to live, obviously, in the places where the housing prices you out, but you wouldn't want the rent to be too cheap, which I just find so off-putting, and it's like the opposite of how I choose places to live.
Right, when we were just talking about that, I'm looking at, can I afford this? What does the culture of the area seem to be? Do people seem to be happy? And are there things to do there that I enjoy?
Right, what is there to do? Which often
the geography.
That often has to do with culture, which, you know, I noticed that a lot of the worst places have the highest, I would say, concentrations of cultural activities, like Hartford, New Haven,
mm-hmm.
New London, and also access to other things to do, like nature. And I would say, unless you live in a rural area, which a lot of these don't consider because those populations are too mm-hmm. small to get on these rankings. So in Connecticut, because of our geography, cities will often give you access to rural areas quite close or to mm-hmm. outdoor activities quite close by, but you still got the culture. And that balance is important to me far more than, you know, and a whole bunch of other things go into it that are more nebulous. But I just find these lists like, who is this for?
Crime didn't even cross my mind.
Oh, yeah.
I don't worry about that. I don't know. I live in the Frog Hollow neighborhood. Like, I have so many, when they say crime rate, I have so many questions about what does that mean?
I think they say that it takes into account both property crime and violent crime, but they sort of weight violent crime higher.
I still want to dissect that because I would be concerned if there was a lot of random violent
yes.
crime, but just violent crime, like, that's bad, and that's not something I want around me necessarily. But if we're talking domestic disputes or, you know, a drug deal doesn't work out and the people mm-hmm. who are involved shoot each other, that's different from me feeling like I'm going to be personally targeted when I'm not involved in the street economy or I don't have an unhealthy personal relationship. That's a different situation entirely.
Exactly. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't understand, which is that, you know, New London, for a small city, it definitely has more than its fair share of shootings and stabbings and violent crime in general. And while that does make me very sad, it sounds callous, but that doesn't affect me personally in the sense that I am ever afraid, because I'm not. If I try to count up the truly random crimes that I've heard of happening in New London, there's like, I could count them on one hand going back like 10 years, and maybe there are more, but like it, random violent crime is extremely rare. Think of all the random violent crimes we've heard of happening like on running trails in really nice towns that are probably on this list.
Right.
That's just not going to happen to you, except to the extent that random bad stuff can happen to you anywhere in this world, and because it's life. It makes me sad that people look at the crime rate. If they really, if real people even look at the crime rate when they're moving to a city, do people do that in real life, or is that just on these lists?
When I was getting my house, I knew like there are a couple of blocks in the city where there's a lot of violence, a lot of shootings, and it's frequent, and that seems like a place where maybe you'll catch a stray bullet. But that's like two or three blocks where it's that hot to where I'd want to avoid it. But would I be like, I'm going to rule out an entire city or an entire neighborhood even? No.
Right. I would certainly rule out certain blocks and certain very small areas. And I feel like you can tell by looking at those areas at the condition of the buildings and so on.
I'd visit first. I wouldn't just read something online. I mean, because even if I know that I'm interested in an area, even before, I mean, before I'm going to sign a mortgage, I'm going to go and stalk that place day and night just to see what it's like anyway. Just to be like, oh, 3 a.m., people are having a, you know, a block party and they're like doing great, I don't know, but you know, whatever imaginary thing is happening at 3 a.m., I want to see what it is. So that's just like, do first-hand research maybe instead of trusting, like, I don't even know who created these things.
Yeah, I don't know. These are supposedly created from probably like census data and who knows, you know, government data. And it's not that the data is wrong, but they interpret it in this way that I just don't think is helpful. So this is an example that's more funny, really, but Money Magazine rates, I guess every year they do the best places to live in the U.S., and I don't know how many, but that's like top 10 or top 20 or whatever it is, but they that ends up cutting out a lot of states. So they published in 2017 the top place to live in each state, and the Connecticut pick was Manchester, which I thought was kind of funny, not like anything against Manchester, but it seems such a random, like the best place. Now, if you live in Manchester and you want to say this is the best, okay, that's great. But to pick it at random based on data, you know, and they do mention it is near Yukon, it's near the airport, it has a relatively short commute time, I assume, because most people are just commuting into Hartford. It has a historic Main Street. Yes, it does. And it has local community events, including board game nights and a Thanksgiving Day race. I would bet that, like, every town in America has those things.
That seems a little bit random, although I am glad to see that Manchester made it and not West Hartford for something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised it's not Richfield's.
Right. But if I were to, I mean, I guess I could say Manchester is economically diverse. So you have people of various income levels living there, not necessarily right next to each other, but I think that's a positive. There are parts of Manchester that feel a bit like a city, and then there are parts that are more rural, and there are some really nice parks there.
Right.
So I would give it that credit. Like, you've got some nice bike paths through Manchester. It's proximity to shopping, not necessarily, you know, we're not talking Fifth Avenue shopping, but there's malls, shopping, right, the and malls and stuff like that.
There's certainly like a lot of conveniences around there, grocery stores and all that.
Yeah, but it seems so arbitrary when taking
it just seems very arbitrary, and that kind of, I think, points to how random is this whole enterprise of ranking towns. I've never met anyone who picked a place to move to because of the crime rate or the unemployment. And except in the general sense, if it's someone who's looking for a job, they go someplace where there are lots of job openings. People pick a place they can afford, but mm-hmm. I don't know anyone who's like, well, let me calculate the median home value before I pick. Like, as long as you can find something that you like, that you can afford, that's like, in real life, people I know, that's how you, that and like the vibe. You can't rank a vibe. Like, I helped my mom move a few years ago to Niantic, and there were certain things that were important to her that are not on here at all, like walkability, because she doesn't drive. Mm-hmm. And not too many towns in Connecticut have the kind of setup where you can really live without driving at all.
Right. There's a site called WalkScore where you mm-hmm. can, and it's not a science, but you can enter in a street address, and they will tell you what the walk score is. People are starting to use this, and some places will advertise a higher walk score. And I put in my hometown, and I think it came up with a 4, which is really terrible. It was like, you have no sidewalks within 3 miles, and you can walk yourself to a gas station. So congrats. What's the proximity to public transit or you know, to the trains, to an airport, if you're someone who does a lot of travel for work, that stuff matters more,
right?
I would imagine.
There are a lot of other things, I think, that people consider in terms of just environment, like to be near the beach or to be near, like you said, the airport, or to be near a big city if you're not in a big city. Mm-hmm. And all these things are, I guess, harder to rank, but that is what I think, although different people will have different opinions, that's what makes any individual's list of best type of places.
Right. Well, and something that I just read actually today in The Current, I don't know if you saw this yet, the one synagogue up in Windsor is closing.
Oh no, I didn't.
And they're doing a, you know, they're sort of merging, I guess, with the temple in South Windsor. And there's going to be a whole, this is, you know, here's where we're sending all of our stuff. So something's going to Washington, D.C., something's going to Cuba. But that's something too, where if you look and you're like, my religious practice is somewhat or very much important to me, right? And you want to look and you go, well, Windsor, there is not going to be any synagogue there. And then where's the nearest place? And if you're someone who needs to walk to get to it or just doesn't want to be driving for half an hour, even if you don't go, sometimes it's comforting to be close by to those things. And that can rule definitely stuff out too and be like, this part of the state, there are no synagogues or no church of this variety or whatever.
Yeah, and that kind of goes into, like, for me, I look for diversity. I don't feel comfortable in a place that's not diverse. It doesn't necessarily matter so much, like, the breakdown of people, but, like, I just want to know that all different types of people are comfortable mm-hmm. living in the city. And I think that's important to a lot of people, even if it's for totally shallow reasons, like they want good food and they want lots of ethnic restaurants to eat at. You know, I've heard a lot of people actually say that they chose the city because it has, like, so many good different types of restaurants or all kinds of real life considerations that are not based on like crime rate. I certainly don't go to like all the galleries in New London, mm-hmm. But I like knowing that there are other artistic people that live, other creative people that live around me, mm-hmm. even if I'm not part of any kind of scene.
You were mentioning one of the things that makes towns attractive can be walkability and, you know, we're saying proximity to transit. We just had the opening of the Hartford Line, which is train service between Springfield and New Haven with several stops in between. Let me see if I can get this in order. So we have Springfield, Windsor Locks, Windsor, Hartford, Berlin, Meriden, Wallingford, and then New Haven.
I have not experienced the Hartford Line yet at all. So I'm curious, so have you taken the whole thing?
I have. And as you can imagine, with things that are free, there's going to be some crowds. Mm-hmm. So I would say that my experience, like parts of it are not going to be indicative of how it's working when there's people who are paying and using it for the commute. I went both days and I had two different experiences. And I guess I can talk about the actual train experience and then a little bit of what things I've observed around there from like a transportation nerd point of view. So the first day, which I thought this is going to be complete craziness, actually went really smoothly. Went into Hartford, not the first train, but it was one of the earlier ones in the morning, though. Went there, they were giving little, what were they, complimentary tickets, handing those out. They had the schedule sheets. I didn't read that, but they had these ambassadors. They had their bright red shirts, and they were there to try to guide you, say, this is where to go on the station, go up, go around. They were very helpful, bugging you where you needed to go. The boarding situation went pretty quickly in Hartford, I felt like. And I was going down to New Haven, and I thought, okay, I'll go down there, put around at the Arts and Ideas Festival, and just see what's in New Haven for a few hours, for like a good part of the day, and then come back, and not on the last train, because, you know, I didn't want to risk that.
What time is the last train?
So that's a good question. So I don't know, but it's earlier than you would think. So okay.
So it's not like the Grand Central, like, drunk people train at 1:07.
No, unfortunately, okay. Because I have a friend who's a DJ and is always doing shows in New Haven, and I keep getting invited to these, and I'm like, you start after the last train has left. Right. I can't do that. Yeah.
So this is really geared to commuters more than,
right,
like, people attending cultural events at night or what?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, the good thing is that schedules could change. Mm-hmm. So while you can't change a train track, like, it's going where it's going, they might have the demand.
Add more service. Yeah. Right. And I hope that there will be. Yeah.
I hope there will be. So we didn't take one of the nice branded new Hartford, well, they're not new, but the branded Hartford Line trains down. I was only able to get Amtrak, but it was the same. They're honoring the tickets.
Okay.
So outside of the free weekend, they're still honoring those. There's like an overlap situation. I don't completely understand. Basically means that you do get a lot more service options for when you can go. So went down there, no problems. There was a part of, I don't know offhand how fast it's supposed to go at its fastest. But I have some friends who were like, I guess there's some kind of speed app where you can see. So they were all like Instagramming.
Like a speedometer for your phone.
Yeah, speedometer, radar gun, I don't know. Something like that, where they were like all Instagramming, like when they hit some kind of top speed, that they were putting that out there. So it can go, it can move, but it's not doing that for most of the trip. It was nice because for me that opens up things a lot more. When we went down, there was a friend who joined whose family has a pizza place. I had never had New Haven pizza before, so I got to have that experience. And this place I stopped at was really good. And I was able to, I was in a cafe car. So I was able to, like, on the way back, go and bring that with me and have a table to sit and eat more pizza at, like a civilized person. And that worked out really nice. And, you know, waiting for the train back, I'm looking at my phone and seeing that there had been some trouble with, like, some trains didn't have air conditioning and there's crowding and delays, and I'm going, oh, this is going to be so terrible. But mine came more or less on time. It might have been a couple minutes late, I don't know. And got back with no trouble. So Sunday, I'm like, okay, great. Fewer people are going to be out on Sunday. I don't know what happened on Sunday, but I was like, we're going to go up to Springfield now. That was a mess. It looked like they had fewer ambassadors at Union Station in Hartford. No one really directing. There was a train that arrived, and I'm like, no one was really announcing what the train was. And I thought, well, surely this is, along with this time, I think that this is the one we want to be on. So a bunch of people boarded. Some were thinking we were going to Springfield. Some were thinking they're going to New Haven. And then someone gets on and is like, basically, everybody off, that's going to the rail yard. And then we were told there was like a confusing thing that was in the schedule. So they weren't wrong, but it wasn't described well. So we had like a whole, we had another hour to wait to get to Springfield. And luckily, it wasn't a big deal, because I'm like, okay, well, we'll just go up the street and get a donut or something and kill some time.
So how frequently do the trains run, do you know?
It's, you know, I don't, it felt like, I'll put that information into the show notes, but I felt like there was, like, one an hour in each direction.
Okay.
I could be wrong with that.
So kind of like Metro North.
Not terrible. I mean, definitely an improvement over what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So on the way up to Springfield, like, very few people got off the train in Hartford. I'm like, oh no. So it was like a standing room only thing. And I ended up in this little cubby area. I was calling it my timeout zone. It was like where they store like a shovel and a dustpan. And I was told that's also where they probably put their overflow garbage. But I didn't. So I'm like in there, and it was, that part of the track did not seem to have been improved yet. So it was really jostly and not smooth. But even the boarding at the other stations was much longer. Got to Springfield. We did our thing, whatever. Go to go home. And looking at this, and it looked like it was another disaster of a day. And that one, thankfully, when we got on the train back, we were able to sit down and everyone seemed to be able to have seats. The boarding took a really long time and it was super questionable because they had everybody on the train exiting through one door.
So is this because they're still kind of working it out and it's new?
I hope so. I don't know why, but it was a little bit weird. And then they had to, because Springfield, they don't have this like super raised platform, so they had to get people in wheelchairs off. They had to do this hand crank thing. So like a sky lift. And this woman came out on her in her chair, and it was like a bit of a larger chair. And the wheel, the line, like it was misaligned, and she got stuck on the ramp for a bit, and like she's freaking out. It didn't look like it was secured to anything. And eventually some other people helped her and it worked out. Nobody died, but it was really iffy and it took a while. And I think she was getting back on the train anyway. So it was a production that felt, you expect crowds when there's a free thing. You expect there to be some delays, but there was some stuff that I'm like, I don't know how this is going to go.
The stations where they stop, in most of the towns, do they stop in a place that you could get out and have a good time in that town, or do they stop like a little bit out of the way?
There's this concept, transit-oriented development. If you're going to have a major bus station or a train station, that you build up around that and you have housing around that and stores that people want to go to and have it thriving. Some of the towns are working on it. In the Windsor Locks, I don't know. It's like a drive-in, park your car and get on the station. And it didn't, from what I could see, I didn't see it. I didn't get off there. And I looked around and I'm like, what else do you do?
So sadly, the Windsor Locks stop is not at the airport, I take it.
No, it's not. Which is also like what...
Which would have been nice.
It would have been nice. It would have made a lot more sense in some ways. I'm not sure what's up with that. So that was a very confusing one for me. Wallingford seemed to have a little bit, I didn't get off the train there, but there was like, there were a few things right around there. Meriden seems to be trying to get with the times and really building up. I hadn't been into Meriden for a couple of years, and there were new developments around there that looked quite nice. Berlin, I'm so confused as to why there's a stop there. Like, I mean, historically there was, so that might be why. There were a few places there, but it's the same as Windsor Locks. I mean, I guess it's just a sort of a commuter drive-in, but there were a few, I could see a few restaurants there. So that was kind of a crapshoot for the smaller places. So New Haven, Hartford, Springfield, I wrote up a little thing afterwards thinking like, what is your transit-oriented development? Like, did these cities think about incorporating the train? Or so when you get off the train at New Haven Union Station, it's a decent station inside. It's not horrible. But you get out and the buildings around there are all so huge. And, like, there's a giant sprawling police station, there's, big parking garage and stuff, but there's not immediate wayfinding stuff, so you don't have signs telling you what direction things are in right away. They had some markings on the pavement pointing you in directions of different things, but they were a bit faded or peeling off. They did have signs eventually, but you had to go a while or be checking your phone, and like, not everyone has good data plans or, you know, access. So
are you checking, like, the website of the...
Right. Or just looking on, like, Google Maps.
Oh, okay.
To be like, where am I going? So luckily, like, we had a person with us who was more familiar with New Haven. It was like, oh, this is the way to go there. But if I was on my own, I would have been having to do a lot of intense, like, trying to figure out the directions. And we were trying to get to the green, which isn't that far. And there was a big event going on there. But it feels far if you don't know where you're going, and the oversized blocks like seem to go on forever. So they hadn't quite figured things out yet, which I was surprised because it is New Haven and it's like closer to New York. And like you were saying, it's a hub. Why would you not have better signage there? And especially with anticipating the opening of this, like, spruce your stuff up a little bit. I did hear that they do have another station in New Haven that's a bit more integrated into like the downtown.
Yeah, I know there are two.
So
I try to avoid them, but I know.
Yeah, I want to check that out to see how that goes. But it was a little bit confusing. The station itself is nice, but it's like you've got things, but you can get off and be looking around, going, "Ooh, this is intimidating," and I'm lost easily. Springfield, they totally renovated their Union Station. Not totally. The station itself, the inside part is nice. It has a, like, It's like new car smell. The bathrooms are clean. Like for a train station bathroom, it's better than the mall or something. Like these are, they have their staff on there. I was really impressed. They have drinking fountains that work and they don't look disgusting. They have stand-up desks with outlets and, you know, so you can do a little bit of work. They have lots of seating. It's well lit. But like I was saying, the platform, I guess they're working on their train platform. Or they're working on that. But you get off the train and before you get into the station, you're in a construction zone. And you walk across tracks, like just the tracks, like there's no barriers there. You go through the station, then you got into this giant parking lot thing, and it's kind of like New Haven where you're going, okay, now what, now where? After a few blocks, I found some wayfinding signs, but it was like the sign was broken, so it gave you the direction at least to go in to get to the museums and whatever else. But the part that had the walk times was cut off. So I don't know if there was a mistake on calculations or I don't know what was up with that.
Sabotage.
It was weird. And Springfield, like from block to block, had totally different. So the first things that we found were there were a lot of strip clubs that murals on the side, you know, but it's like a. There were like two or three strip clubs in this area. And I'm going, this is what you're greeted with.
It's the red light district of Springfield. Who knew?
Yeah, when you get off the train and I'm going, so what else is there? And then you go like another block and a half and there's this beautiful tree-lined street with gorgeous houses. And people take care of their lawns and it's nice. And then it opens up to this other thing where there are no street trees. And it was just kind of an all over the place feel. And it's something I learned is that they have their challenges like Hartford does, but there were a lot of places I went into where I'm going, this looks like a vacant lot. This looks abandoned. This looks horrible. I look it up later on when I got home, be like, what was up with that? Oh, that's under construction. It would have been great if they put a sign out saying like, under construction, this is what we're expecting to see here by November 2018. Because you're like, that's sad, but you're on your way to doing something versus, whoa, what did I just get off the train and land in? So, like, on both ends, there are some things that they could be doing better. Now, like, with Hartford, so I came back, I'm like, well, I'm noticing that. What about Hartford? And I don't think that we necessarily have more going on than New Haven or Springfield. But we have a lot better job with our signage so that immediately, like right when you get off get out of the station, at the end of the block, there's signs saying, here's your major attractions. There's a park right there. So the way it's built in, it doesn't feel as sad. Like,
and the Hartford train station is in a good location as far as walking to places.
Yeah.
Pretty
so
good.
It feels more doable. Now, the inside, it's dark, it's dreary, there's not enough seating. The women's room anyway needs like some serious rehab happen to it. There are a lot of problems with the actual station, but when you get out and you're like, now let me see what there is to do, you're not just like stranded there checking a map. I guess I was disappointed that the cities didn't take steps, and all of them could have done something different, but the cities that are on the line didn't take steps, be like, we've got this line opening, we're gonna have more people, mostly commuters, but still, can we do some things to make these areas a little bit better so people aren't annoyed when they're inconvenienced? Or if you're, I mean, we're thinking about it in terms of commuters, but
I mean, I hope job that interviews. I hope that it really expands in terms of hours, and also it would be great if it got some little branches, you know, to come out over to southeastern Connecticut, because a train to Hartford from New London would be so convenient. If I had to take a train to Hartford, I could take one to New Haven and then up. But that would just be hours of added travel time compared to what is a pretty quick drive. And like you said about New Haven, I would go to Hartford so much more frequently at night. And I think it would also encourage people from Hartford to go to New London or go to Mystic, which... In Mystic, there's a lot of nighttime events, too, and New London has a lot of nightlife. So if this spurs Connecticut to add transportation that will link together different regions, that would be so beneficial.
Yeah, and something else that I noticed, and maybe I just haven't figured it out yet, but from the few times I've booked flights, I've noticed I want to go to this such and such place and then maybe this other place. Let me type in the places I want to go or the ultimate destination. And then you're going to give me a schedule on a couple of days, you know, whatever days I put in. Here are some time options and here's where you would connect. which ones do you want, you know, and then you figure out based on your convenience, your money, whatever, you can do that. And with this, because I was thinking, how can I go to New London? I know I can do it, but I couldn't just type in Hartford to New London. Now give me some things so that I can figure out when to get to, like, what the New Haven, like, what that situation would
and
be.
And that's because it's a different line, because it would be combining Amtrak with this new line.
Yeah. But with flights, they'll do that with, like, Delta and whatever. Yeah. Like, they'll do that. So I was like, why wouldn't they give me, okay, did you take this one down to New Haven, and then you're going to take this, and we'll just, like, combine this. You pay for these things, and then here's your pass for this, here's your pass for this one. Figure it out. And I, like you said, like, if you have options, you might not take it, but I could also see myself going and, like, I might be okay with a little bit of a few hours hanging out in New Haven if I say, okay, I'm going to time it so I can go and have some pizza in New Haven, and I don't want to spend a lot of time there, but here's a few things, and then I'm going to go on my way. Then I can make that choice and do that. But so I know that I can do it. It's just I have to get my head around it, and I feel like it's not as intuitive as they could make that.
I wonder what cities will do as well in terms of municipal websites or local tourism websites that have how to get to this town, you know, and they usually give the directions from the nearest highway. And sometimes they'll say, you know, or take the Amtrak train or the Metro North train to this station.
And I think it does open up, it has that potential to open up a lot of jobs to people and those employment opportunities, right? And thinking along those lines, wanting those expanded hours, not everyone works first shift.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, overall, I think this is a positive step.
You have written about this, or you will write about it on Real Hartford.
Yeah, I wrote about this on Real Hartford.
So we'll link to those in the show notes. Traveling in peak season when you don't want to deal with crowds of people. So it's peak season right now. Mm-hmm. It's summer, although this morning when I left, it kind of felt like fall or something, but it's summer, and a lot of people travel in the summer. So if you're kind of like me and you love traveling, but you kind of hate other people, how do you go to popular places without encountering hordes of other travelers?
So typically I will do the off-season stuff if I feel like I really there's not going to be any other option. So places like Provincetown, where I have been there in the summer a couple of times, and I'm always going to love Provincetown, but I don't think there's any way to avoid crowds there in the summer. So I know myself, I'm gonna go, you know, shoulder season as much as possible.
Yeah, right, just avoiding all for off-season.
But for certain, if you have a flexible work schedule, then it's more doable to mm-hmm. go weekday, like to something when people aren't necessarily around. But it also depends on what it is. Like beach, I don't know what the secret is.
Beach, I would say go either very early in the morning or later at night after people with kids have gone home for dinner.
Okay.
So like 6 a.m. or like after 7.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I don't... My hypothetical children don't have schedules, so that's good information. I forget that might be why people leave early. Okay.
Yeah, or people leave, you know, even if they aren't there with kids, they'll leave just because if you spent the whole day at the beach, you hit a point where you're like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
And you want to go out to dinner or whatever. But if you time your beach going at the, not the off season, but the off peak time of the day, I think that's one way to do it. And I was going to say that the day of the week too, like, and it probably some places will be busier Monday through Friday and others will be busier on weekends. But if you can, even in really touristy places, there are still people who work there and they do have 9-to-5 Monday through Friday jobs, most of them. So, you know, if you're going to downtown in a city, that'll be a really different vibe than on a weekend where there's lots of events. Like if you're not specifically going to one of those events in a city that really crowds up on weekends, you can go there during the week and get more of an experience of what it's like to live there, which I guess is basically just one of my main, you know, how I travel anyway, but it also helps you avoid crowds. It's just trying to act more like a local and think about things as a local. So, you know, if you want to go to a restaurant, think about, okay, if I lived in this neighborhood, well, I wouldn't want to go there when it was packed with crowds, right? I'd go at like a different time or a different day. And it's usually really easy to find out like when a place is most popular. I think Google even has like a little, when you search, or maybe other search engines too, but I think Google has like a most popular times, and there's like a little graph showing when most people go there. So, you know, also just, I consider neighborhoods to be an attraction. Like, so my example here is St. Louis. You know, the arch is like, when you think of St. Louis, you think like, oh, go up the arch and the little elevator thingy. Well, if it's like a weekend and it's going to be packed and it's summer and it's, you know, there's going to be crowds of people. So skip that and instead go check out some of all the different neighborhoods in the city, because a lot of cities are, especially like Midwestern cities, that get that reputation of having kind of a dead downtown because it's like just for workers. But that's because most people live in a neighborhood, which around here would be a whole nother town, but there it's a neighborhood. So they all have their own character and they all have their own vibe and their own, you know, shops and restaurants and parks and things to do. They might not have the major attractions, which might be more central, but they'll have plenty of cultural and local stuff to look at. And that's a little bit more what you do if you were a local. You'd hang out in your neighborhood and explore on a weekend rather than heading downtown where all the tourists will be. You know, and that kind of also goes along with like, skip the, we talked about this a little bit when we, in the last episode when we were talking about New York. Skip the major famous attractions unless it's something that you personally really want to see. My best example for this is Arches National Park. So you've probably seen the Delicate Arch 10 million times, even if you've never been to Utah. It's on their license plate, but it's also just on every photo. It's like an American icon. So I did not do the hike up to Delicate Arch. I saw it from afar, which was totally fine, because the rest of the park was absolutely spectacular. And to me, it was so much more stunning than Delicate Arch, just because I'd never seen it before. I wasn't expecting it. And it's also a good example of an attraction that is visible from afar. So like the Eiffel Tower, the Empire State Building, the Arch in St. Louis, you can usually get a lot of great vantage points of tall or elevated things like that. And you don't need to do the tour up to the top. You can experience it and experience the location in general much better, like without putting yourself in that crowd.
A local example of that, the Colt Dome. When you're up there, it's not painted on the inside and you're not seeing the dome. Like, you're just under it, so it's not nearly as cool as being below it or if you were on a nearby other building.
So, and that's such an iconic image of Hartford, I feel like. And you really get the sense of like, oh, Hartford and its history. When you're just driving or walking along and you look over and you spot that crazy onion dome thing, that's when it hits you. I don't know. That's when I appreciate sites like that. Not when I'm on a tour to see it necessarily, but when I just catch a glimpse of it. You can also do touristy things without doing the top touristy things. So don't go to the big famous museum on the day that it's going to be most crowded. Find a little niche one, or don't go to the huge, whatever it is. Find like a smaller version of the same thing, and you'll probably get a better experience because it won't be so crowded, right? And, you know, like one way that I find you can do this if you're traveling farther away from home is when you're in the hotel, you know how they have those little like racks of brochures and flyers from like local attractions in the lobby? Look at those, because a lot of smaller places won't have the budget to like advertise themselves beyond their locality, and they won't be too many reviews on Yelp or TripAdvisor because it's not a nationally known attraction. But for people who are traveling through there, you can find so many things that you wouldn't know about, like, you know, historic houses or theme parks or just all kinds of activities that wouldn't bother to advertise themselves to you across the country, but would bother to advertise themselves to people who are already in that location. So that's a good way to find like slightly off the beaten path things to see.
if you're flexible with your schedule and don't need to eat at certain times of day, if you don't need something to happen at a specific time, that can be really helpful. So I feel like I'm in practice for being an elderly person sometimes. And I was in a place up in Boston yesterday where, by all looks of it, by the quality of it, by just the appearance of this place, it should have been packed. And then I looked and I was like, oh, it's super early. Like, no wonder. I mean, there were still a few people in there, but it was because it was maybe like 5 o'clock-ish. I was like, no, this place is going to be, give it another hour and a half after like we left, like 7:30, 8 o'clock. This place is going to be off the chain. You won't be able to get in here.
Yeah, eating at off-peak times is a really good idea. Yeah, I didn't even think of that. Because what I'll typically do is not eat out so much when I'm traveling, but buy my own food, like at grocery stores. And so I'll usually be traveling around with snacks. And I won't have to base my schedule off of like breakfast, lunch, dinner. So if I'm hungry, I can just like find a nice place to sit and eat my snack out of a plastic baggie rather than having to have a more structured day. Like if you're doing the full-on tourist thing, you will have that structured day with breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And just getting out of that typical schedule, I think, will get you much further off that beaten path. Yeah.
I know that you don't typically travel for food, but one of the things thinking about, if I wanted to go and do fish and chips down by the shore, if I wanted to do that in the summer, say maybe I won't do that on a weekend, but like how would, you know, I'd still be fighting people. So for something like that, yeah, I would have to be like, all right, we're going to just eat at a different time of day. But that's fine because I tend to be a snacker and a grazer, so I can be more flexible in general. And I don't have the kids with a schedule, so I'm not thinking dinner has to be at 7. It's whenever I'm hungry, which is often. So, just to echo what you're saying about going to neighborhoods, I was in Boston yesterday for a conference and spent most of the day in Roxbury, which I'm not as familiar with, and walking through the neighborhood, and there were people out, but it wasn't crowded. And did kind of a meander back and got more going up like Tremont Street and getting a little bit closer towards like the touristy areas, and it was still like, so there were people out, it wasn't dead by any means, but compare that to trips where typically I would go down Mass Ave, I'm going to the Fenway area, I'm going down Newbury Street, where it's mobbed. A completely different experience. I'm not going to say I'm never going back. Like, I like Newbury Street enough to deal with the crowds there, but it was just a matter of, oh, just maybe change the direction, go to where there isn't this high concentration of attractions. There were things going on there, but it wasn't all like in one area. And so that made it much more doable. And that was like also finding a place that was really nice. And it happened to be, it was good luck timing.
Flexibility, and then I feel like it always goes along with planning. So the more planning you do, and you don't have to stick to your plan, you can always be flexible, but having the plan lets you be flexible. And the more planning you do, you can find out, like you said, fish and chips. So like, I live right near a very popular seafood shack kind of place, and it definitely gets crowded, but it is, I would say, like the second most, like there's the famous seafood shack in the city where everybody goes. And then I live near the one that is like also very popular, but it's like the second one. So like, you don't have to go to the top place. You know, chances are if you're going to a place that's known for a certain type of cuisine or whatever it is, the second or third rated place will probably also be good, like really good. So if you're not trying to keep up with the whoever, like that's just, that alone will help you out. And that's where planning comes in too, because maybe you've heard of the most famous place, but if you do your research and you find out, okay, well, what other places, similar places are there, you know, or what place do the locals like, you know, maybe the people who live there, if you look at Yelp or something, maybe people will say, oh, well, I never go to XYZ because it's always full of tourists, but instead I go to this little hole in the wall that's like even better or just as good. And that's, you know, if you do that research beforehand, you won't be like standing on the sidewalk with your phone, like really hangry yeah. and like looking for where you can get in that's not a 3-hour wait or whatever.
Yeah, you have video of me from being up in Springfield. Well, so that was the case of we didn't, there should have been some planning that happened, really didn't, but I was like free train tickets, so whatever. And got very lucky, but we're doing that standing there checking the phone, and but it was also a weird off time. And when we were leaving, by the time we were leaving, it was starting to get busy. So Yelp, I just want to, like, as a tangent, that it's so helpful. And I know it gets a bad reputation. There's things to look for and not look for. And I sort of have my own rule, which is if a place has fewer than 4 stars, they're probably doing something wrong. Because, but you also want to look at how many reviews have they gotten.
Right, because Yelp, if it doesn't have too many reviews, it can get, the average right. will get dropped down by, like, one person with a grudge or something.
Yeah.
So you have to be a little careful.
And if it looks like it's, like, borderline, I will read some reviews to see, are, you know, because some people can be real prima donnas about, like, they didn't smile at me this perfect way when I came in the door. You want to see, I'm looking for, is the food going to be good and am I going to not get food poisoning? Like, that's basically my criteria. I don't care about the ambiance.
I find TripAdvisor also super helpful because yeah. I feel like it has a bigger user base than Yelp. I could be wrong. And it's a bit, like, less kind of young and hipster.
Mm.
I think a lot of people use Yelp as an opportunity to be funny and showcase right. their amusing little anecdotes or what have you. And a lot of people use TripAdvisor, and I guess they, like, wish they could have been a guidebook reviewer, and they didn't. They failed, so they just write it all for free mm-hmm. on TripAdvisor. But people give a lot of really practical information on there.
Mm-hmm.
Just stuff that you wouldn't even consider that's so helpful, like, the parking lot gets full, so drive around the corner and there's a better parking, or just things that you wouldn't consider. Yeah. So, yeah, research, all that kind of stuff will always help you identify the less crowded spots and even the times of day, you yeah. know. And they might just happen to mention, oh, I went to this beach at, you know, 7 and everyone had gone home, so I had the whole beach to myself. And, you know, and there you go. Now you know that.
Right now, I believe this is Rose Weekend at Elizabeth Park. This Rose Weekend, there's going to be roses there. Well, the roses have been growing there for a while.
Yes.
And if you're okay with not having all the programming and missing certain tours and things like that, then you could have just gone the week before or the day before.
Yeah. There's like two reasons why you should look up events listings. And one is so that you can avoid those events if you want to avoid mm-hmm. crowds. And the other is so that you will know, like, it might notify you of something, like, if you didn't even know there was a rose garden there, mm-hmm. if you see there was a Rose Weekend, and then you think, wait a minute, if there's a rose garden, the roses don't bloom for a day. Like, right. and then you realize, oh, I could go there on a Tuesday morning at 9, and it'll be almost empty, except for people jogging. So,
yeah. With Elizabeth Park, you have this main, really beautiful rose garden, but they also have a garden off to the side, like you cross over the road, and that's still going to be really packed on Rose Weekend. But if I'm thinking, well, what happens if you find yourself someplace accidentally touristy, right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, you didn't do your research and you showed up and you're like, oh, this thing's happening today and that's a lot of people, but I don't want to waste my trip. Like, that's a place where I'd say, well, you can see that there's something over there. Just go across the little path, go across the street and see. Have you come across anything like that where you were able to salvage?
Yeah, I the last time when I was in Tucson in May, I had plans to go to a bunch of different neighborhoods, and one of them was a neighborhood that I had been to previously, and I knew I really liked it, so I wanted to go back. So I looked up events in the city that weekend, and there was a music festival in that neighborhood. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to plan to go early in the morning because the concerts didn't start until 11 or something. So I showed up there pretty early and it was very quiet. But what I hadn't realized was that they were already setting up. So a lot of streets were blocked off and there were a lot of trucks unloading tents and tables and things like that. So, and I was just really lucky in that case because I'd been there a few months before. So I, you know, I'd gotten like a good look at it and I didn't have to miss out. But I also had a lot of other plans for that day, so I was able to just say, okay, I'm spending less time here than I planned on, but I can go and spend more time in other places, you know, and But that's, so that was fine. But it's also something to consider with events, is that the crowds are not only the crowds that come from the event itself. There's also the setup before and the like overflow crowds after that are going to stick around. So just like, yeah, lots of planning.
Coming soon on Going Steady, we'll be chatting with Steve Wood, creator of CTMQ, to learn about how his views of travel have evolved while writing his site. Later, we'll be taking a field trip to the Connecticut Wine Trail for research. Also, we'll be exploring the Northeast by air and sea, or at least by river.
Thanks for listening to Going Steady. You can now listen on the Apple Podcasts app, iTunes, and Stitcher. If you'd like to rate or review us over there, that would be a great help. You can also subscribe to Going Steady and receive notifications by email. Sign up at goingsteadyct.com. That's goingsteadyct.com. Comments, suggestions for future episodes, hit us up at goingsteadyct.com. ¶¶